from the Gettys Virgin and 91.1 WZBT Gettysburg. I'm Jamie Welch, and this is On Target.
I'm Ben Ponce. Today on Target, we'll discuss recent comments made by Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos on the future of campus sexual assault investigations and Title IX on campus.
Kristen Largent is our featured guest. Stay with us.
Well, it's been another riveting week on the Gettysburg College campus. I think if there were one word to describe the first month here at Gettysburg, it would indeed be riveting. You have any challengers to that word, Jamie?
Riveting definitely sums it up, I would think, Ben. Yeah.
Yeah.
It has just been a riveting month here.
I actually don't think it's been that riveting, but in any case, let's get into it. So the first item on our lovely agenda is an article that actually appeared in this week's print edition we published earlier this week. And it was on the recent comments made at George Mason University by Betsy DeVos, the Secretary of Education, on the future of department policy towards campus sexual assault investigations, and specifically Title IX. We ended up speaking with Jennifer McCary, who has quite a long title these days, but one of those items is she's the Title IX coordinator. And we also spoke to Dean Julie Ramsey. I think one of the most controversial aspects of the previous Department of Education policy under the Obama administration was that it mandated campuses use the preponderance of the evidence standard, which essentially means that if there's a 50% plus one chance that, you know, something occurred, then that was the result. There, some other standards that had been utilized in the past potentially could have been the clear and convincing evidence standard, or in the legal system, of course, that's beyond a reasonable doubt that's required. And anyway, many people felt that this imperiled due process for the accused, while others maintain that we need to be focusing on the victims or the survivors of such incidents over the accused. Jamie?
Yeah, and so Betsy DeVos announced that they're going to probably be making these changes to Title IX through one of these Dear Colleague letters that comes out periodically to determine Department of Education policies for all of the schools that receive federal funds moving forward.
Which is pretty much every school.
That's pretty much every school, yeah.
I think even Bob Jones University probably received some federal funds.
Indeed. So we spoke with the campus partners here on campus, so Jennifer McCary, Dean Ramsey, and they said that they have no plans to change their policies around evidentiary thresholds for finding people responsible for violations of college policy. They plan to, at this time, move forward. But they did say that if there was some regulatory change, if one of these letters says you have to use a new standard, then they would comply with whatever they said.
That's, you know, there'd be some problems if we weren't going to comply with that, i.e. we'd lose federal funding, which, you know, would make a $65,000 a year education of $565,000. Okay, maybe not that bad. But anyway, not that any student would ever have occasion to complain about tuition. But I think what is worth noting is that not only did Jennifer McCary suggest that the college was going to stay the course, she said, quite frankly, that the college adjudication process is largely effective. Jamie, can you find her quote and read that? I think many people have suggested that making college administrators judge, jury, and executioner, and ultimately, in some cases, usurping or supplementing the role of law enforcement is problematic. And Jennifer McCary was pretty emphatic in pushing back against that. Do you have her quote there?
That's the one. Yeah, the quote, the current model of allowing institutions to investigate and adjudicate works, there just needs to be more options available as far as resolution is concerned to best meet the needs of our students.
Yeah, so in that article, we really outline the policy at the college based on the student handbook, and we confirmed with Dean Ramsey that that is, in fact, the the protocol, and so it's definitely something to follow. I think Nick Arbaugh was quoted in the article. He's a sophomore student senator and member of several campus political organizations. He expressed an awful lot of concern that Obama-era guidance imperils due process, which he calls a cherished constitutional right. And, you know, quite frankly, I think there probably has to be a way that we balance those concerns, in my opinion. All right, moving right along. I was waiting to see if Jamie wanted to weigh in there, but that's a negative.
I think that we have said all that we need to say on this. The Title IX changes, I really don't know how I feel about Title IX changes. I'm really not going to editorialize it, but I would definitely say, Jennifer McCary does a fantastic job as our Title IX coordinator. We're going to miss her, I know, on campus when she leaves in December.
And you said she's going to Bowling Green.
Yes.
Which is where she did her graduate work, as I recall.
Yes.
And possibly also undergrad. I don't remember. But she's going back to Ohio, I suppose.
So yeah.
I guess we'll have a new Title IX coordinator in the interim,
and
probably while they search for a long-term replacement.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the new person views, the investigation process. Because I know that, Jennifer McCary has a way of doing things, but I'm sure that other people have different ways. So I know that, when she leaves, there definitely will be probably some sort of change in the way that this institution handles Title IX
investigations. Well, the college had a bit of a dress rehearsal last year when she was on leave for a little while, so we'll see how that plays down.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how well that little dress rehearsal worked out, so I'm hoping that that they find somebody who is really dedicated to this work and does not already have another job on campus. Because with this kind of work, you really need somebody who is dedicated to working with Title IX, and not like a million other things that have nothing to do with Title IX.
Well, yes, I think that's true, although Jennifer McCary's title would certainly indicate that she does a couple other things on campus.
Yes, but they're all tangential.
Focused. I understand
your
point.
Yeah.
All right, next item on the agenda. This past weekend was homecoming, so some alumni came home. And actually, I particularly liked one quote in an article that was written by one of our first years, Maddie Neiman. It was a very good article, if I do say so myself, speaking on behalf of the news section. Anyway, not that I would be biased in any way.
Of course, there's
a great quote in that article about the Gettysburg No that was by Amy Houck, who is a member of the class of 2012. It's right above where you are, Jamie.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want to read that quote?
Yeah, so Amy Houck, who was apparently super involved on campus, said that she really looks forward to seeing familiar faces on campus, saying, quote, "It's the Gettysburg No." It's like, oh, I don't know your name, but I recognized you from class.
Yeah, I thought that was a particularly poignant quote, even on a small campus. Obviously, you're not going to know everyone's name, but a lot more people are going to look familiar than if you say we're going to Penn State, as many members of my family did.
Yeah, and I don't know if you know too many people at homecoming.
You're certainly probably not going to know a majority.
Yeah.
Or recognize a majority.
Yeah.
But apparently there were 468 alums registered to attend, which honestly is not a particularly high number, given that there are 2,500 students on campus at a time. But
yeah, homecoming isn't as big here. There's only really two main reunions that happen over homecoming. There's the 0 year, like people that just graduated are invited back for a reunion. And so the class of 2017 was invited back. And then there's the 5 year reunion. And the rest of the reunion has happened over reunion weekend over the summer, which is when we see most of the alums come back. It's a much larger event. They fill up a bunch of the residence halls on campus. So that is when we see more of the alums. Homecoming, it just isn't as big here.
It's interesting that that's the model, because you would think that you would want alumni to return while there are students on campus and while there's activity going on. I know they do the alumni college thing during that summer reunion weekend, but I'd be intrigued to talk to someone from the DAPR department, which is, I gotta say, of all of our acronyms on campus, Development Alumni and Parent Relations, also known as DAPR, has got to be one of the best.
Oh, DAPR is fantastic.
If you were going to rank the acronyms, that's certainly above RFYP. I might as well just say...
On RFYP again. Is that just your favorite activity to rip on that acronym?
Well, I know that you work there. So
well, there's
yes,
there's
going to
there's that,
on.
And then there's OSOGL, which is another one that you love to rip on. That's
well,
a,
OSOGL,
that's a perennial
least,
favorite.
OSOGL at least forms a word. RFYP.
Riff up.
Yeah. Well, it's like, why can't I just say Res Life? I know, because you also have first year programmings. But then it should be like Res Life 1 or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
That one needs to be workshopped a little bit. RFYP is actually not that much easier than just saying residential and first year programs.
Well, what's interesting is the first year programs actually comes because we used to. Have first year programs under student activities, and Greek Life wasn't under student activities. So it was the Office of Student Activities and first year programs. But they just went by OSA. And then
OSAF?
Well, they just went by OSA. And then first year programs kind of moved over to
Res Life.
And then Greek Life moved in. GLC used to be under OSA also, which is interesting. But anyway, I digress.
All right. Well, that was a great college history lesson.
There you go.
Nothing I love more than learning about the bureaucracy at Gettysburg College.
Oh, I know you love bureaucracy, Ben. That's like your favorite thing in the world.
Budding bureaucrat, you might say.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Well, next
your internship over at the revenue office in Harrisburg.
Yes, I spent the summer interning at the Pennsylvania Department of Revenue. That is everyone's favorite government department. Although I had a very positive experience and enjoyed the people with whom I worked and enjoyed the city of Harrisburg. So, not going to be ripping on my former employer.
Oh, certainly not. Wouldn't expect you to do that, Ben.
Tee me up there, JB. All right. Next on the agenda, love revenue.
Oh, absolutely.
Without revenue, you don't get your roads.
Absolutely.
And we all know that Pennsylvania could use some roads. Okay, so speaking of money, Professor Ryan Kearney in the biology department recently won a $1,031,000 grant through the Gordon and Betty Moore Foundation that will focus on the relationship between algae and salamander embryos. So... I don't really know what the relationship between algae and salamander embryos is, but then again, I didn't just get $1 million to look into it. So salute. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. Those are some more details that we learned.
Didn't know
this
at
week.
The time, yeah.
Yeah, but $1 million is nothing at which to sneeze.
No, it's one of the larger grants that I've heard about in my time here at Gettysburg. So definitely whatever he's doing with those salamanders is good stuff, according to the Betty... The foundation, whatever it
the Gordon
is.
Gordon and Betty Moore Foundation.
Yeah, the
Speaking
Gordon
of
and
grants. The chemistry department also recently secured a National Science Foundation grant in conjunction with some area schools, including FNM, Ursinus, Messiah, and Lebanon Valley, to look into some other scientific concepts I don't understand. There are
I think we should have some of these professors on to talk about their research.
We could do that.
I'm particularly interested in this salamander research because this is the second time that we've talked about it, and I still don't really understand what the nature of the symbiotic relationship is between
what
the algae.
You throwing in the word symbiotic from your
I did get
grade.
A five. I got a five on the AP biology exam. Okay, do not be hating on me right now. Okay.
Oh wow, the AP bio exam.
Yeah. Well, you know. It's the small victories in life, Ben, so...
Yeah, well, you know.
You know how it is.
Not everyone can pull in the big $1 million grants, I suppose.
Yes.
And those students just need to celebrate their 12th grade accomplishments ad nauseum.
Thanks.
Okay, thanks, moving right along! So the only other thing I will note is that I was looking, doing some research into this... Professor Kearney's grant, and he also he had a much smaller grant from the National Science Foundation in 2014, also looking into solar salamanders. So this is certainly something on which he's been focusing for quite a while. The last item I'd like to get into before we talk about or before we talk to Dr. Largen, is that the women's lacrosse team, and because this occurred over the summer, you know, we didn't obviously get to publish in print about it at the time, but the women's lacrosse team won the Division III national championship last May. And this past week, they were recognized by the Gettysburg Borough Council with the Eddie Plank Award, which recognizes strong achievement in athletics by local community members. And it's given in memory of Eddie Plank, who I assume Plank Gym is named in honor.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
I doubt there are too many other famous Planks in Gettysburg history, but who knows?
You know, it is the Eddie Plank Gym, so... Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, congratulations to the women's lacrosse team. They were recognized at homecoming on the football field this past weekend. So I think that about covers the news of the week. We'll be talking in just a moment to Dr. Kristen Largen, our new college chaplain, about a lot of a variety of things surrounding her new role, her vision for the Office of Religious and Spiritual Life. Some construction that's going on over there. I think it'll be a really fascinating conversation.
And I believe, Ben, now we have the Bullet Report.
Yes, in fact, we do. Broadcasting live from my cell phone. So, last week, the football team lost a nail-biter to our dear friends from Carlisle, Dickinson, 24-21. On Saturday. It was a busy day in Bullets sports last Saturday. The men's cross-country team finished 12th out of 19 at the Kutztown Challenge. The women's team finished 10th out of 18. The women's golf team finished first of four at the Penn State Harrisburg Invitational. The men's golf team finished 10th of 16. The men's soccer team won 3-0 against Washington College. The women's soccer team defeated Washington College 4-2. The volleyball team defeated Washington College 3-0, but the field hockey team lost to Washington College 3-2. The women's volleyball team also defeated Rosemont 3-0. The men's golf team finished 4th of 28 at the E-Town Fall Tournament, while the women's soccer team lost 4-0 to McDaniel. The field hockey team beat McDaniel 4-3. The men's soccer team lost to Lebanon Valley 2-0, and the women's volleyball team suffered a loss to McDaniel 3-1. I believe that was their first loss of the season. But certainly a strong 12-1 start, though 1-1 in Centennial Conference action. That ends the Bullet Report. Back to you.
Thanks so much for that, Ben. We'll be right back with Ben's interview with college chaplain Kristen Largen right after this.
And joining us today on Target, we have the Reverend Dr. Kristen Largen, the new chaplain here at Gettysburg College. Dr. Largen, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, it's great to be with you. Thanks for asking me to come.
Yeah, so you are here at Gettysburg and are replacing Dr. Donella, who was our chaplain for a number of years. Could you just tell us a little bit about your background, how you got here, and you know,
yeah,
what you're
absolutely
looking forward to?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for the question. So I also am a Lutheran pastor. Reverend Donella was also a Lutheran pastor. And I've been in Gettysburg since 2006. My position currently, I'm half-time at the college and I'm half-time at the seminary. And so until July, I was full-time at the seminary teaching up there and also serving as the dean there. I'm originally from Colorado. Colorado is still the home of my heart. And I don't know when this podcast is going to come out, but I want to say that Sunday night, the Broncos had a great game and beat the Cowboys. So that's just my little, like, you know, shout
certainly
to the Broncos.
Certainly doing better than the Eagles.
Right. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
Don't need to bring up a sore subject. Anyway.
Right. This is not going to turn into a football podcast, although it could. So, like I said, I'm an ordained Lutheran pastor, but I also have my PhD in what's called comparative theology. And so I have a strong background in kind of interreligious conversation. My work has been primarily with Buddhism and Hinduism. And so I'm really excited to bring both the kind of the chaplain role, but also do some oversight of the different religious programming that's going on here and bring that more broadly into the campus.
Yeah. So one thing that I think students will soon come to know is that we have some construction going on, or soon to be going on. Or can you? What's the status of that?
It is going on and is like moving with a lightning speed, which is fabulous. So currently, the kind of the office of the religious and spiritual life area is in the basement of the chapel. Mm-hmm. But beginning in the second semester, opening in January, we'll have a new house. It's the Huber House. Mrs. Huber deeded it over to the college, and so they are working on that right now. So it's on that corner of Stevens and Mummensburg Road, I think.
Yeah, next to the Center for Career Development.
That's exactly
on
right.
On one side, and admissions on no. Financial aid on the other
That's
side.
That's exactly okay. right. Yeah, and so it's going to be just fabulous. It's so many things. It's going to have a multi-use kind of meditation prayer service room. There's going to be a kosher kitchen that multiple traditions will be able to use, a small dining room, a nice living room for movie night, you know, book conversations, and then a bathroom, of course, that will have a foot washing station for the Muslim students who want to have daily prayers there.
So it sounds as if, yeah, one of your goals is to sort of broaden a little bit the, role of the chaplain to kind of include more faith traditions. Would you say that's accurate? Or?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, here's the thing that I've kind of the belief that I come out of that's animating how I think about the office and the work that I want to do in particular. And it's this complementarity between a particular identity and then welcoming and celebrating diversity. So Gettysburg College is a college in the Lutheran tradition, which doesn't mean that we want to make only Christians here or have only Christians here or that we want crosses in the classroom or anything like that. But it does mean that we're sort of rooted in a particular identity that has some strengths, out of which we can really engage well diverse religious traditions. And so, yeah, so I see myself certainly as a chaplain to the whole community and all that entails. But then also I really want to support and nurture different students who come here with different religious identities. So if somebody had a home in a Muslim tradition where they're coming from and they come here, I want this to be a home in that Muslim tradition also, but in a way that they can also be sort of challenged and grow in all the other ways that students are challenging and growing when they're on campus.
So given that Gettysburg is a college in the Lutheran tradition, we're affiliated with the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America.
Exactly.
Got that right.
Nice.
I practiced
yeah.
earlier.
Very good. Did a wonderful job.
So how does that, what does that mean for our college in the, in the 21st century and moving ahead? What does that look like given that, we are striving to engage with all these diverse religious traditions on campus, but at the end of the day, we are a Lutheran institution. What does that look like?
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm so glad you asked it. So what that means is, and I mean, first I want to say that there are 26 Lutheran schools in the country. It's a network that's second only to the amount of Jesuit schools in the country, and so it means that we can have some interesting and creative partnerships, which is always fun. But all of those schools look really different, right? Because they're located differently. So people always point to St. Olaf and Luther that are these Midwestern kind of classically Lutheran schools, but there's also Pacific Lutheran, California Lutheran, way out on the West Coast with a very different kind of background. And so our job, I think, is to interpret some of the kind of classic markers of Lutheran identity in a way that give us some real strengths, again, in engaging diversity. So here's an example of one of those. So one of the hallmarks of Luther's own thought and Lutheran tradition for 500 years has been an emphasis on education and critical inquiry. So this idea of not just accepting what authority might say is true, but actually really challenging that and looking for yourself and coming to the sense of truth in your own kind of in your own educational process, and so I think that's a great value that adheres very well with a liberal arts education, right? And it's something so again that we can kind of operate out of and talk about, but in a distinct way. Another example of that would be the concept of vocation, right? The idea of what is my calling in the world. And so, again, it's not just for Christians, but this idea that I want my work to be an expression of who I am. I want want it to be meaningful. I want it to relate to other people and express my passion in the context that the world really needs my gifts, right? And so, again, it's not a way of being narrow, but it's actually a way of being broad. And so there's Eboo Patel. This is the last thing I'm going to say, and then I'll let you ask another question. Eboo Patel has this great quote where he says, without a strong anchor here, you can't build a bridge to there. And so I think sort of acknowledging our Lutheran identity is a great way of being here and then being able to build a bridge to there, right? And sort of really support and nurture diversity on the campus.
Mm-hmm. So you are a Lutheran, an ordained Lutheran mm-hmm. minister, and certainly, you know, in this 500th anniversary of the Reformation, I'm going to ask about that in a second.
Oh, good.
But, you know, I was, you know, reading a little bit about Luther earlier today, and I was, you know, reading about the Reformation, and he has his five sola concept, and one
nice.
Of them is in Christ alone. Mm-hmm. So how does, you know, you personally, being, you know, espousing that tradition and being as part of that, how does that, when you come across students of other religious traditions, when, you know, your belief is in Christ alone is where salvation comes from, et cetera, not to get into a too heavy of a conversation
yeah, hey,
on the
no
podcast.
Problem.
How does that sort of, you know, relate to a student in the Jewish tradition or the Muslim tradition or something like that?
Yeah. First of all, I mean, let's just get the salvation question off the table, because I want to say, as a Christian, that God takes care of that, and that's not my work. So I don't come out of the mindset like I've really got to kind of quote unquote bring everyone to Christ to make sure that they're saved. I just don't think that's the case. I just think God takes care of that. So when I meet a person of another religious tradition, my first instinct is not to think, oh, I've got to make sure that this person like knows Christ. That's not it at all. Actually, in my understanding, yeah, I do believe in Jesus. That's out of my tradition. But that actually gives me the freedom to talk about what I believe and what's important to me in a way that I can actually hear what's important to you and who you are and what you believe. Because I know that it's not about being, I don't have to prove that I'm right. I don't have to prove that you're wrong. That's sort of all taken care of. It's not the question for me. So the question for me is, how am I best to love my neighbor and live and treat this other person as though they're loved by God? Because, of course, in my view, they are. Mm-hmm. And so I think often we get the idea that each religious tradition, like when they come together, it's a battle to see who the right one is. But I actually think it's more like, in the best way, a coming together in a handshake and sitting down together and finding the places where we're in common and looking at our deep passions and learning more about one another. So I actually find that in my tradition, this grounding in Christ is actually this freedom to be open to the things that other people are grounded in. And so it's not a disposition of judgment. It's a disposition of welcome.
So, kind of also going off of the Lutheran tradition, this year, as I mentioned a moment ago, is the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. And I say this as a member of the ensemble. The Gettysburg College Wind Symphony is playing a piece at its concert on September the 30th at 8 p.m. at the Majestic Theater.
Do the plug. I'm all for it. Can't wait to hear it.
Entitled, This Is Most Certainly True, and You Came and Spoke. And
yeah.
The piece was commissioned by this consortium of Lutheran colleges. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'm so glad that you mentioned that. That's going to be really fun. I'm very excited. So that's this little piece, this 6-minute piece, is a good example of a partnership between all of these schools, right? So everybody chipped in a little bit, and then everyone's going to play it in their context at a certain time, and we're playing it on the 30th, like you said. And yeah, I think what I loved about it, hearing the piece, and then especially in the conversation with you all afterwards, was how this one piece of music has such different meanings for different people, right? So there were some people who were saying, yeah, you know, I'm not Lutheran at all, but to know that this will be meaningful to Lutherans in the audience really resonates with me. It's like a gift that I can give to this person. Or somebody else said, yeah, I'm not Christian at all, but the idea that Luther really was standing up for what he believed in and, you know, helps me to think about how in this time I could stand up for what I believed in. So it was for me this great example of how this one musical piece can actually build these lovely bridges between people who have different religions or maybe no religion at all. So I'm eager to hear how people receive it when you all play it.
And hopefully we'll have a good attendance at that concert. I know it's a combined event with the orchestra, so hopefully that will be the case. I will also note that currently in the library, there is a display of books pertaining to Martin Luther and the Reformation. If anyone's interested in further reading on that subject, that's available. I guess looking ahead, as you just started in July here at Gettysburg, at Gettysburg College, What are sort of your goals, your roadmap to where you see the Office of Religious and Spiritual Life going?
Yeah, absolutely. I have three goals. I can tell you them right off the bat. I've been practicing them, actually. The first thing is that I want to create a place where, again, people of all traditions or no tradition can kind of engage the big questions, right? So there's a place for education, for conversation, and connecting specifically religious programming with other things that are happening in the college. So, you know, right now there's the situation in Myanmar, right, where there's the Rohingya Muslims who are being displaced by the Burmese military. Well, that's a religious conflict that also has political and economic ramifications, right? So I'd love for people to be able to bring questions of religion and spirituality into all of the other issues that they're discussing. So that's one goal. The second one, like I said, is that I'd really like to provide a welcoming home for people who are in a variety of religious traditions. So in my dreams, we would have a vibrant Lutheran group. We would have a vibrant Buddhist student group. We'd have a vibrant Hindu student group, right? As well as our burgeoning Muslim student group. And of course, Hillel, which is such a fabulous, strong organization. And I'd also love to see that maybe we'd have a group for students who don't identify with any individual religious tradition, but they're seekers and they're interested in questions of faith and spirituality. That would be great. And then the last thing is I want to create a space where we can build interfaith friendships and learn how to dialogue across differences, which I think is really hard. But to be able to model that here in this community for our other members of the community, and then also to build some skills that we can take with us when, after graduation, I think would be really great.
Mm-hmm. So, I guess going back to the construction for a second, it occurred to me, so what is going to happen in the basement of the chapel after the office moves?
Yeah,
there's some space there, obviously.
Yeah, so our Catholic Campus Ministries is still based out of there. They're a large, vibrant group of students, and the Elizabeth Smith, who's their advisor, is fabulous, and she's going to remain there and continue to use that space with the Newman Student Organization, and so they'll continue to occupy that space, and I think that we'll continue to use it for a variety of different groups the way we do now. But I think there is a larger question of the chapel. I'd love to turn that space into something that's more broadly usable. I think it sort of stands almost as an artifact now rather than a kind of, again, a vibrant, active, dynamic place. We do events there a couple times a year just when we need a big kind of hall in some ways, but it would be great to see that space develop into something that would be able to be used in a much greater variety of ways. So that would be a hope down the road as well.
And so I guess just to kind of recap, you mentioned we have a Catholic campus ministry. We have Hillel, the Jewish campus ministry. What, or I guess not necessarily a ministry, our Jewish student group.
Yeah.
What other religious traditions are represented on campus?
There's a DCF group, a Disciple Makers group, which is a more evangelical Christian group. There's also a small Fellowship of Christian Athletes group. I actually haven't met with them yet. I've been emailing with their advisor and a couple of the students, but we haven't gotten together yet. But they, again, kind of relate faith and athletics, obviously, as you might guess from their name. And then did you mention the Muslim Student Association, which mm-hmm. has just gotten started? Right. And then, so those are the recognized groups. I hope I'm not missing any. But I think I've had individual conversations with other students of different traditions. And so I think there's potential for different groups to kind of develop as there's mm-hmm. interest.
And then so I guess the last topic or question I would have is, so what's your, you mentioned your vision and your goals. What are some like measures of success, I guess you could say, for your time at Gettysburg and in splitting your time between here and the seminary? I guess in terms of hours, we have, I don't want to say less, but less hours than Chaplain Donella had. But sort of how do you navigate all of that into, you know, you mentioned your vision, but like what are some measures of success? What are some, ways that you hope the students are getting more involved?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, certainly there's no way to avoid the success of numbers, right? I mean, it's just to how many people are involved, how many people are coming to the kind of events that we're planning, how many people am I having conversations with, how many people know who I am, right? Mm-hmm. How many students do I know? I mean, so some of it is just that the way in which I'm active and present on campus and students are active and present, and these religious issues are being raised more broadly. I think so there's an aspect of that. We've done some really great work on the website, so if you haven't checked out the religious and spiritual life part of the website, check that out. I think we've done some really good things there. So, and we've started up a little Facebook page and an Instagram account. Camelia, our student worker, is doing a fabulous job with that. And so I think markers of who's sort of checking in and paying attention, some of those things. But it's a little early to tell, right? I'm still trying mm-hmm. to find my feet a little bit and get a sense of that. But for me, the most important marker is really how students are able to integrate these issues of faith and spirituality into their own formation and get a sense that they matter and are engaged in those questions.
Mm-hmm. And are there potentially any events that you'd like to plug in the upcoming?
Oh, hey, yeah.
I mean, since we plugged,
since you plugged yours,
a music event coming up.
Well, there's actually another a music event, kind of. It's for Family Weekend, so on October 29th, I think, is the Sunday.
Yes, I think 27, right? 28, and 29 is the weekend.
Okay.
So, yeah, Sunday,
that
the 29th.
Sunday at 10 o'clock, we're having a Reformation service. Seems the thing to do on Reformation Sunday in the 500th year of the Reformation. But it's also going to be the fall choir concert. And I'm working with Dr. Natter to bring the choirs in and have some special music. So I think that is going to be really fun and very exciting. So that's the next thing that I'm looking forward to.
Sounds great. Dr. Kristen Largent, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for the conversation.
That's On Target for this week. We'd like to thank College Chaplain Kristen Largent for being our featured guest this week.
We'd also like to thank the staff of the Gettysburg and the executive board of WZBT for their ongoing support of this project. Be sure to download us on iTunes and subscribe on Stitcher or Google Play or wherever else you might find your podcast, as long as it's one of the places we publish.
On Target is a joint production of the Gettysburg and WZBT. Our theme music was composed by Diego Rocha of the class of 2019, who is a music major focusing on composition from the Sunderman Conservatory of Music.